an excellent teacher. But he also knew how to build character in his students. His word was law. J.F. Berger later recounted the circumstances surrounding his engagement and marriage, which involved Kramer. During my vicarage year, 1888-89, at Fall Creek, Wisconsin, I learned to know my future wife, Theodora Clara Friedrich, who was then a sweet 16. We fell in love about Christmas 1888 and had a secret agreement when I left August 7th, 1889. How familiar does this sound to many of our vicars? Professor Kramer used to say to the vicars, Ihr kennt euch ja sehen, aber brief wechsel in strengthen verboten. You may look around, but all correspondence is strictly forbidden. So I lived up to that rule and never wrote a line to Theodora while I was a student at Springfield, nor did I receive a letter from her. The older Kramer grew, the more mild and fatherly he became in his dealing with his students. Kramer was not in favor of lightly incurring debt, and so many times he would help out needy students from his own pocket. But the times in Springfield were difficult for the Kramers. Up to 1881, only one death occurred in the family, the death of a young daughter in Frankenmuth. But in 1881, inside of 2 months, three of his grown children and two grandchildren died. Kramer bore the shock as best he could, but Mrs. Kramer was devastated. First, the only daughter of the family, Maria, died with her two children. Then the second youngest son, Friedrich, died on September 19th. The eldest son, Heinrich, soon passed away as well. A document called the Lebenslauf der Frau Professorin Kramer recounts, the heavy burden of her cross became almost too great for Mrs. Kramer to bear. In this short period of 2 months, three grown children, among whom was her own only dearly beloved daughter, and two grandchildren died in rapid succession, and she began to waste away. She passed away on November 11, 1884, aged 67, and Kramer himself found his dear wife kneeling at her bedside. Tragedy continued to haunt Kramer and the seminary. In 1888, a typhoid epidemic broke out at the Sem. April 23rd of that year, 1888, the seminary was forced to close its doors because of the epidemic. Several students died at the seminary, and several others who had left and gone home died at their homes. Kramer would not be stopped. In the midst of the epidemic, he went around from bed to bed on visits. Finally, on July 30th, the surviving seminarians were able to meet for their final exams. Yet in 1889, in the spring, the epidemic broke out again, and 17 seminarians contracted the disease. All but two recovered. It proved trying for Kramer. His strength was now starting to ebb. But several projects remained that he was determined to see through to guarantee the future of the seminary. First, in 1890, he helped convince the Synod to build a new building at Springfield. Second, with his encouragement, the Synod called a second theological professor, Reinhold Pieper of Manitowoc, Wisconsin, brother of Franz Pieper, accepted the call extended to him. He arrived in Springfield with his family on April 2nd, 1891. Kramer was not well at this time. In spite of his ill health and the rainy weather, he insisted on meeting Pieper at the train depot. Rainy weather sounds like Fort Wayne, but this is Springfield. Although his condition became worse, for the rest of the week he took care of his usual duties. That involved lecturing up to 23 times in 1 week. On Sunday, he baptized two children for the pastor who was confined to his room. Although he seemed weak then already, it was feared that he would collapse during the baptisms. Yet he mustered his strength and delivered his usual lectures on Monday and Tuesday that following week. The next day, Wednesday, was Pieper's installation. Kramer delivered the installation sermon in the new chapel and installed Pieper. But toward the end of the service, he collapsed. He was then led out of the service, and a doctor declared a heavy attack of the grip. Interestingly, Pieper then became Kramer's comforter on his deathbed. And Pieper relates that he had never seen a man die like this. He had seen plenty of men die before, always in the hope of eternal life in his congregation, strengthened by the word, but never one like this. Kramer says Pieper had always been a great man in the service of the Lord, but he was greatest on his deathbed. Quoting him, a hero of the faith, as only one can be found in a thousand. During the first week after taking sick, Kramer was clearly conscious. And it almost seemed that he would be able to overcome the sickness with his strong physique. He could sit up at times, and he even began to talk about taking up his classes once again. But then his condition worsened. His sons Wilhelm and Carl were summoned by telegraph, and at night the students would change off watching at his bedside. They tell the stories of what Kramer did during this time. Several times he got up and ordered his attendants to dress him because he had heard the bell for class and he had to go teach. Once he insisted that he had to get up and preach. At other times, seeing his students there present, he would put precise doctrinal questions to them. That's my favorite. Never given them an inch. They always had to squirm. Gradually, though, his strength waned. On April 30th, the doctor said he was dying and didn't think he would live through the night. Of course, he did. He lived through to Sunday morning, May 3rd, when God gathered his faithful servant to himself, age 78. On Tuesday, May 5th, after a brief service was held at his house, or on Tuesday, May 5th, a brief service was held at his house. He was buried May 7th, Ascension Day. Professors Pieper, Steckhardt, and Graebner of St. Louis were present at the funeral. Also, several district presidents and representatives from Fort Wayne, Milwaukee, and Addison, now River Forest. Reinhold Pieper preached a sermon on Revelation 2:10. A large procession formed with more than 70 pastors present, 300 students from St. Louis and Springfield, and the total number of participants being estimated at 2,000. Excluding Abraham Lincoln's funeral, this was the largest funeral procession up to that time in Springfield. I don't know if that's changed since. He was buried at the Oak Ridge Cemetery. On May 31st, just 3.5 weeks after his funeral, the new building was dedicated at Springfield. Kramer's Seminary, better yet, Christ's Seminary, would survive. Now a little assessment, and we'll close. I painted broadly the contours of Friedrich August Kramer's life. What I hope you've gained from this little enterprise is a respect for the breadth of his experience, the determination that he brought to any project he undertook, but above all, his dedication to the gospel. Several things stand out as we consider the big picture. First, as I've said, he put himself fully into any work that he started, seeking excellence, and most of the time realizing great success. On the desk in his office, he is said to have had this following Bible verse, "Cursed be he that doeth the work of the Lord negligently." And I encourage all of you seminarians to write that on your desks as well. He was also, though, dedicated to sharing the message of the gospel. Now, having given you a little law, we'll give a little gospel. Dedicated to justification by grace. And yet, as he did so and preached this language, this word, he never compromised on the full confession of faith. Doctrinal confession was not in his vocabulary. Again, he never gave up his mission work. Even when saddled with the responsibilities of administration, he made every possible effort to continue to feed hungry souls with word and sacrament. In Fort Wayne, St. Louis, and Springfield, he offered himself up in any way to serve the church. As a professor, he influenced a full generation of pastors. At times, as I've said, he gave 23 lectures per week. But the effort was well rewarded. In the Fort Wayne period, 1850 to 1861, he prepared 80 candidates for the ministry. In St. Louis, 1861 to 1875, 225. Finally, in Springfield, 1874 to 1891, 330 candidates for the ministry received the bulk of their training from him. 635 total. In short, Cramer firmly believed that Christ had spent himself for him. Now he would spend his life for Christ by spending it for others. Our synod and this seminary would be much different institutions were it not for Cramer. At the very least, his life provides an interesting picture of 19th century church work, but I believe there is more to be said than that of him. Cramer's life and work offers us an archetype, a model of faithful service in Christ's church. I think I've said enough, but let me conclude with a reading from a bronze tablet found in the vestibule of the Springfield Seminary, Cramer Hall, which captures all we've talked about quite well, I think. Cramer Hall, dedicated in the memory of August Cramer, May 26, 1812 to May 3, 1891. Lutheran scholar, pioneer missionary among the Indians, pastor, professor, and president of this institution for 41 years, a man of God who by his rugged faith, his burning zeal in the performance of his duties, his labor, and his self-denial gave evidence of the love of Christ that was in him, and whom we greatly honor as the father of the seminary. Thank you very much.
Applause indicates how much you enjoyed it, so now comes the second half.
Professor Rath, no doubt, will be able to handle a couple questions.
Please. I have a couple. First of all, what is the grip? What is the grip?
It was basically when congestion would take the lungs, people would have difficulty breathing. Okay. But it kind of
covered a multitude of sicknesses.
The more significant question, you said that he was ordained by Kleefbach.
Yes.
What sort of interaction did he have with the broader constructional movement in Germany outside of Leia?
It was pretty much limited to Leia. One of the unusual things, it's a good point to bring up, Todd, the circumstances surrounding his calling. Obviously, the normal procedure for a person in his situation was to receive a call into the state church and you work through the whole bureaucracy in that regard. But he, Cramer, was called by a tiny little group of colonists that were gathered around Leia. And then, to make matters even more unusual, he was able to receive his ordination not at the hands of Leia, not in Bavaria, but in Schwerin with Kleefoth. Very unusual. How could this be? Well, one of the things going on in Germany, in confessional Lutheranism in Germany in this time, now having, this is after the Saxons have emigrated, and confessionalism has staked out a territory for itself, is that the mission work that is being undertaken by many of these pastors, Leia, for example, but especially the lay people and some of the more, aristocrats among the lay people, are able to pull some strings, if you will, to get their way. Now, I don't know how significant it is. I haven't found anything in Cramer that says that in which he identifies as being ordained by Kleefuth as a significant element in his life. It just sort of works out that way. And in order to keep the support of von Maltzen, he seems to go through with that. He's sort of willing to go along that way. But nevertheless, what you see is sort of an independent working in the midst of the German confessional movement at this point in time, which I think is very interesting, and you should do some more study on it so you can tell us about it. Yes, please.
Professor Rice, you pointed out the significant work of Kramer among American Indians. Now, in the Latin American case, during the times of conquest and colonization, primarily Dominican and Franciscan priests who do the work among American Indians, there's the evidence of Catholicism today among the predominantly, Amerindian population.
Mm-hmm.
In the case of the United States, I am interested if there's any evidence today that Lutheran work among Indians was being carried out. What's the implications for today? Or the days of come to the primarily Reformed culture of the time?
In certain ways, you might call the experience, the experiment at Frankenmuth, a failure, and in other ways you have to call it a success as well. There are several elements that are going on there. Leah has sometimes been maligned for this idea of planting a colony of Germans, and thereby forcing German culture upon the Native Americans. Now that's a bit anachronistic in my opinion. However, having said that, when Kramer and then later Beierlein appears on the scene and they're doing work among the Chippewa and the other Indian tribes of the area, they face a tremendous burden and difficulty. And that is, number one, they're called pastors to their congregations and they see themselves first of all as pastors. As they have time and opportunity, they take the message out to the Native American population, but as their congregations grow, that becomes more and more pressing. And as their congregations grow, the Indians become less and less interested in living by these folks as well, and remove themselves in some cases. In other cases, are forcibly removed. So to make a long story short, to find, at least in the case of the Saginaw Valley and the work among the Chippewa there, there is not a significant residual Lutheranism that you find out west later. And then mission work among Indians in the latter part of the 19th century takes on very different forms. Does that satisfy you, Leo?
Thank you.
Good.
One more question.
Okay.
You speak of, while he was with Count von and Siegel, that they also worshiped with Stefan. How significant do you think Stefan's influence was on Whittakin's...
Kramer?
Kramer's...
This is one of these great debated questions as well. I didn't find any evidence that he ever attended Stefan's church. If he had influence from Stefan, likely it was indirect through the Count. Todd, did you have something?
Well, if he didn't get out of prison until 1839,
he's gone.
Been there,
right.
When Stefan was in Dresden.
Right,
so
right.
It would have been,
so it's an indirect influence.
Mm-hmm. Next pastoral.
Right, right. So it's not direct, but nevertheless, it's the spirit or the atmosphere of the family that he comments upon. That's what stays with him through his life. Yeah.
We'll conclude now with thanks again.